Well, this week, you know, I hope that you see with, you know, as we walk through Moses, maybe you can go back. This, you know, I don't know what you guys do for your quiet time, but you think about leadership and leadership qualities. We're really going to look at this next week when we look at chapter 4. But, you know, there's such a leadership study with Moses. You know, how we were introduced to him in chapter 2 and, you know, just the journey that God had on him. And then the questions that he has for God. I kind of think those are statements posing as questions. We'll get to that in chapter 4 where he has some real objections to following God. And then later in chapter 4, you have that really crazy story about God meeting Moses on the road to kill him. We're going to get that in 2 weeks, and Zipporah quickly circumcises their son, and God is going to kill somebody. He's either going to kill Moses or Moses' firstborn son, but Zipporah steps in. But there's just all sorts of things for leadership. So if you want to think about that, you know, just pray through 2, 3, 4, you know, and just thinking through leadership, and it's a great time for reflection, repentance, all of that. Turn your sheets over. We're going to talk about diaconate this week. Tell me what you know about the diaconate. Like, if you were just going to, again, it's the I meet an alien, you meet an alien test. They're walking on the road and they say, I've heard this word diaconate or deacon. What is a deacon? What would you say? How would you answer that alien? Deacon equals man with a pickup. Okay. Good. I love it. Okay. And we've got the service. Okay. Say that again. Organizes people. Good. I like that. Okay, practical needs. Over against something else?
Yes.
What is it over against? Okay, so spiritual needs. Okay, so practical needs over against spiritual needs. Mercy. Good?
Within the church and outside.
Okay. So, yeah. So now we're talking about, you know, inside the church and outside in the community. Good. Okay. Anybody have a proof text for that? Like, where would you make that case that the diaconate is an office? Don't look at your sheets. Well, Acts is probably not the best place to go, but the one on your sheet is probably one of the best. The Philippians one there, what does it say, David? Yeah, so you know, there you have, you know, the saints who are in Philippi with the overseers, with the deacons. There seems to be a structure that is established in the church. And, you know, the diaconate there is complementary to the episkopos, the overseers, bishops, the elders. We talked about that last week. Good. So where do you... Did you have something else, Craig? Okay, physical aspect. Good. So now, let me ask you this question. Where would you... Give me some... And you can feel free to look at your sheets now, but where would you find this stuff in the Bible? What's that? Okay, 1 Timothy 3, so you have that on your sheet. Somebody read 1 Timothy 3 there. Got it, Craig? Okay. What do you notice? This is one of the main passages about deacons. We looked at Acts 6 earlier. Acts 6 is often cited as an introductory passage about the diaconate, mostly because the seven serve. You know, that word there is used, though they are not identified as deacons. And I think that we have to recognize that there is some, like, these didn't come down, you know, church structure didn't come down on high like Moses coming down from the mountain with the Ten Commandments. There was some growth in terms of the church structure from sort of Acts 6 to Philippians 1. There was some time there for the structure to sort of develop and use. So, you know, I would look at Acts 6, and I think it's good to see sort of the precursor of the diaconate there. But I personally would be cautious as saying that is exactly everything that the diaconate needs to look like. Because we know some things about the seven, right? The seven go out, are preaching, they're doing lots of other things that we don't always associate with diaconal work. They're pretty specific in terms of their working with the Hellenists and all of those types of things. So we definitely want to see that in line with, but might be cautious of saying, like, this is exactly. But yet it develops, right? So what do you notice about 1 Timothy 3? This is one of the main passages that they have. This tells us a lot about what? It tells us a lot about character, but not much about their function, you know, what they actually do. And so it's interesting, you know, we have these things, and those of you who have been in the church and you guys are well taught and you did a good job, you picked up on... You know, one of the things that you didn't mention here was finances, physical finances, meeting practical needs, that kind of thing. These are things that are oftentimes ascribed to the diaconal office, and we build that out scripturally based on some of the character things that we see that are called for with regards to the diaconate. Some of the broader themed things that we see in Acts chapter 6. But nowhere in the New Testament do we have like a full job description. You know, therefore the diaconate is to do this, 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 and this. I don't say that in any way to disparage the office. I think it's a very high office and a high calling. And I don't say that in any way to disparage our ecclesiology, but we just recognize that there is a certain amount of, you know, putting together that we do here, in the sense that there's some things that are maybe less specific than we wish that they would. Or maybe there's a freedom here that God gives us, you know, in terms of how some of this gets applied. Any thoughts on that? Does that bother anybody? Or, yeah, Brent. In the PCA, in our, so what do you mean by our? I'll go the opposite way. In the PCA, yes, the diaconate is an ordained office. And then, which is one of the reasons why in a complementarian framework, it is only, or women are exempt from that office, like we talked about last week. At Christ Church, there is a history here that has made it expedient for it not to be ordained as of this point. It's something that we've been wrestling with. It was on the table for several years before I became pastor here, and what's that? And so it is something that the session continues to wrestle with. So we are out of step with the denomination at that point. So. Ruth Hannah, you were going to say something? Exactly. Okay. Leave some lack of clarity about. Okay. So that's a good observation. So a lot of carryover between sort of what we see as the functionality of the diaconate versus what just an ordinary church member, the people of the church, are doing. So what exactly is the role? Yeah, Dan Callahan. Anybody know that question? Answer to that question? Most. I think Knox is the only other one. I don't think it's half and half. Yeah, I think there's one other church that came in from the EPC several years ago. I think that they're the only other ones. No, I think they'd not have ordained. Yeah. So most do. And in fact, when I was examined as a transfer, that was one of the questions that they asked me, you know. So because we were seen as out of step with the GLP, Great Lakes Presbytery. So anyway, we don't need to dwell on that over. We really want to look at this and try to understand this. I want to get at this. I think what Ruth Hannah said bears some weight. You know, what is it then that, as we look at these things, these are things that everybody, you know, all God's people are to be involved in. You know, what is it that the deacon does then? And I think that's one of the reasons why we see a lot of the character responsibilities and the emphasis on character. Because to a certain degree, these are folks that are to organize. You know, Bianca mentioned the word organizes. Who are to organize and to provide leadership. I actually really like the way that the BCO puts this. I don't have it right in front of me, but they talk about the office of the diaconate as being one which stirs up in the body, you know, the gifts of mercy and giving and generosity and all of these other things that we associate with the diaconate. The deacons are to stir that up. They're to be the ones that lead and facilitate and encourage what Ruth Hannah has rightly said is the responsibility of all Christians, you know, to do these things. And that's why, you know, sometimes, and I know Brent was joking, you know, the deacon is the man with the pickup, right? They're seen as the ones who do all of that. But that's wrong on our part. If we are outside of the diaconate, you know, it's not that now there are hired guns, right? They're the service professionals who do all the moves and, you know, who meet with all of the people that are in need, all of these different things. These aren't the guys that do it all for us, but they're the ones that help us get connected to outlets to fulfill the calling that God has given to the entirety of the church. Does that make sense? So I love that language, you know, to stir up in. So you can be an agitator in a good way, right? as a deacon, you can be an agitator. Let me, so Acts 6, I talked a little bit about this. I like this. Some of you have maybe seen this before. Keller talks about the fall and how it affects us. And I think that this is helpful. I think this is Keller. I'm not sure if it completely originates with him, but I think it does. When we think about the church and we think about God giving elders and deacons, there is a recognition there that we are broken in lots of different ways. So there's concentric circles. So when the fall happened and our state as humans before God, the first level of the fall is that our relationship with God is broken, right? So that's the first level of brokenness. When Adam and Eve ate the fruit, what was one of the first things that they did? They hid from God, right? So their relationship with God is broken. The second level of brokenness is this idea of self. How would you describe that? You know, when the fall happened, how is it that we became, so you see our relationship with God is broken, but our relationship with ourself is broken. How would you describe that? Yeah, the idea of shame, right? They're naked and they're covering that up. There's no longer a wholeness in terms of who we are, but there's that sense of shame and covering. So our relationship with self is broken. So the next level is what? Our relationship with others. How do you see that going back to your fall story? Yeah, the woman that you gave me, you know, the serpent, you know, there was all of this blame shifting, right? That was going on. And so we see this level of brokenness there. And then the last level of brokenness is what? Is what? Creation. Yeah, exactly. So red is not working. So creation. And how do we see that? You know, it's now, yeah, the toil, you know, it's the labor, the thorns, the thistles. So here we have all of us, right? This is a description that we all have to a certain degree. We struggle with our relationship with our God. We struggle with the relationship ourselves, our others, relationships around. We struggle with not only creation, but the created order, systems. Brokenness around us, business, the world, governments, politics, all of those types of things. When Adam was given that cultural mandate to be fruitful and multiply, it wasn't just about agriculture, right? It was to develop the earth and to build cities and to go in all of that. So this outer layer is not just about, you know, purely speaking, thorns and thistles. It's about systems. It's about all of those different things. And we're broken at every one of these. So you can see there's a certain sense in which elders, if you were to describe the work of an elder, elder may work from the inside out, right? If we say that that is an office that with regards to people, you know, wants to address the spiritual, wants to talk about that, lead people, you know, sort of closer to their God in that way. The diaconate works from the outside in. So they're both doing the same thing in a certain sense, addressing the different levels of brokenness within the people, seeking for the idea of wholeness with God, but working at it from maybe different directions. And both of them are important, and all of these need to be taken into account. This is why the work of the diaconate is really, really important. Because, you know, oftentimes, you know, sometimes people come to us and they have, you know, these existential questions at the level of faith. You know, how do I know what I know? And we want to meet them and talk to them. But oftentimes people come to us here or here, you know, or here. And we meet them in those places. You know, sometimes when people are living out here and they don't have a job and they don't have money and they're at brokenness with the systems around us, you can't immediately jump to the this circle of brokenness. You've got to meet these needs first before you can begin moving in a more holistic direction. And this is why I believe that God gives us both elders and deacons, is that we can begin to address the brokenness that exists around us in terms of a more holistic picture of those things. Thoughts on that? Have you guys seen this before? Yes and no? A little bit? Yeah, Brent. Yeah, I'm not too familiar with that. So, not usually in our structure. That would be more on the spiritual aspect, and that would be something. Yeah. Is the elder. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, we didn't talk about that. So we talked about it a little bit last week, you know, some of the different words that are used. But in Baptist circles, the deacon is a little bit more like the elder. Catholic also uses the term deacon. It's a little bit more akin to the way that we use it. I'll mention that again as we go on throughout the day. So, they do not. You know, the elder. So, in the Catholic system, they obviously have priests, you know, who would be similar to the elder, and then the deacon is more of a localized person that does a lot of the function of the priest, but is a lay person. They are ordained, and they pretty much they carry out sort of the will of the priest in that parish. So it's not a deacon like we think of a deacon as being completely separate, but it's sort of like a lay underneath the priest. But then in the Baptist church, they are much more like elders, but it's also a little bit more like a board in some ways. They have sort of it's more of a decision-making structure. I mean, there is spiritual care along with it, but it's a little bit more like a board. The pastor. Right.
And then they'll have deacons, which is really kind of cheating on the Reformed perspective. What are these board of trustees
right
doing different than if they had a
Right. Yeah. Yeah, there, and you know, you can't, some of you are more familiar probably with Baptist structure even than I am, but they, it differs. You know, you've got your general Baptist, you've got your, you know, you're more your non-denominational, and there's some differences in the way that the different Baptists function with regards to that. So, good. Yeah, Dick. Yeah. Oh, definitely. Yeah, for sure. Good. My purpose, you know, this morning is, you know, thinking about how we think about the office of deacon. So here we have, you know, we have Acts 6, this precursor that sort of sets us on a course. We have characteristics that are given to us of the people. That are to hold the office, but what is it that the office actually does? I think that this is helpful when we recognize the different levels of brokenness that exist in our world, and we recognize that God gives us two different offices to address the wholeness of brokenness, but from a different perspective. This is one of the reasons why, for instance, that you see in 1 Timothy 3 is, did you read that, Craig? As Craig read that for us, let the deacons, in verse 9, they must hold the mystery of the faith with clear conscience. You know, Paul oftentimes uses this term mystery of the faith to talk about the content of the gospel. And deacons need to be well taught in that. It's one of the reasons why we have training. I mean, it's not, again, I'm not picking on you, Brent. It's not just that they have a pickup truck, right? There is a theological character to the diaconate, because we recognize that the ministry isn't simply at this level. The ministry may start at this level, but it needs to go to this level. That's the direction that it's going, because ultimately, you know, we make sense out of life when we're in right relationship with God. That's the thing that helps us to navigate all the different circles of brokenness. Sometimes the pain is so great. You know, I remember when my daughter Sophia blew out her ACL. She did it on a Thursday, and, you know, took her to the emergency room or to the emergency orthopedic clinic. They looked at it. They said, yes, her ACL is broken or is likely torn, but we don't know the full extent of the damage, and we can't know it until the swelling goes down. So we had to wait a couple of weeks before we could go and get the MRI and actually see what was going on, so that then it could be addressed. This is often what happens when people come to us. You know, they've just been in the injury, and the swelling is so bad that we need to address down here, but we can't yet until the swelling goes down. We can't really make the diagnosis properly until the immediate is relieved, and then you can begin to go forward. But our deacons, you know, really help us. And they help us, right? They're stirring up the gifts of generosity. They're stirring up all of those things. They're helping us to be able to meet those needs and move forward. Four ways. So here is a definition of diaconal ministry. It's the meeting of felt needs or human needs through deeds in the power and the love of the kingdom, or you could say of the gospel of the kingdom, where there's a king, there's freedom, there's life, there's joy, all of those things that we looked at in our study of Matthew, Jesus talking about the kingdom. But the diaconal ministry starts here in order that we can work here. Now, there's a couple of ways that this happens in the church. And I think that it's good to put these in perspective. I like to divide it this way. You have what I would call the care ministries of the church, and then there's the enabling ministries of the church. So these are sort of the felt needs that then allow for the church to function in a way that can connect with the whole person, you know, the whole circle of brokenness as we come. Care, there's what, you know, there's inside the church needs, I think David said, and then there's outside. You know, inside we have financial issues that come up. We take a deacon's fund offering on the first Sunday of every month. Does anybody know why we do it on the first Sunday of every month? We're so bad at communicating this. We need to do a much better job of this. Nobody knows? Somebody knows, surely. No, that's a good idea. That's why we take the collection on the first day of the week. That's what you're thinking of. You got it, Betsy? Because it's communion, that's right. So there's a long history in the church of, you know, sort of the agape feast, and, you know, when they would come for communion, everybody would bring their offering, and it was not just simply money, but it was all the goods and services and, you know, all of those types of things. So they would celebrate the communion, the feast, and then they would go out and feed the poor with the overflow of that. And that has become a tradition that as God feeds us, we feed others. There's this great passage in Nehemiah where the law was hidden and then it was found, and they read the law and they repented and they celebrated the feast, and Nehemiah said, go share, you know, with all of us. So there's this real connection, and this is always the case. The gospel just begets generosity. And so as we receive, you know, sort of taste, symbolize the reality of the gospel, the generosity overflows. So that's why we do our deacons fund offering, again, over and above what we normally do in terms of the support of the church, the deacons fund offering on the first day of the first month or first week. For sure. The overall sense of our offering is, for sure, yeah. Oh. Tit for tat type thing, yeah. No. Yeah, that's right, for sure, yeah. Good. So financial needs, so the deacons fund, and you know, our deacons consistently say, I mean, we have couple here. Mark has served with the diaconate. Ray has certainly been with the diaconate for a long time. Others? Any others? Not so much. Dick, before he was an elder, certainly served with the diaconate. We've always been able to meet needs, both inside and outside the church. But you have those financial needs. You know, counseling maybe comes in here a little bit. As needs arise, meeting people, you know, sort of at this level, oftentimes, you know, relational counseling, sometimes this level, there is a need there. And sometimes we meet that, you know, we see each other coming and going in terms of elders and deacons. We're just going at it from different directions, but we're coming to the same place. These can be physical needs. You think of widows and those who are infirmed in our midst. So, you know, the the deacons have organized times to go, you know, after Mark Colt died, for instance, you know, Christy is now part of that, that widow category, and so get folks together to go help her with her property. You know, the Englers, as they're going through a difficult time, various ways. You know, this would be, you know, folks that single moms, you know, is a big need here, you know, and it could be very practical things like childcare, that kind of thing. So again, it's not always appropriate for the deacons to handle it themselves. It's one of the reasons why we have diaconal ministry teams, because we have deacons, but then we have all sorts of folks that participate in the diaconal ministry, men and women, and they are really important for carrying out these different types of things. Outside the church are what we often associate with mercy ministry. You know, these are people who have just blown out their ACL, and they're in pain. There's lots of swelling. They're looking for some relief, and they come to the church seeking help for to pay a bill or to you know, all sorts of different things. We get the call through the office. We have different ways in which we work with other local churches around town to ensure that people aren't just gaming the system and that they're really looking for help in a way. But then our deacons and others on our diaconal ministry team, our community care DMT, diaconal ministry team, they meet with these folks, assess their needs, pray with them. Jason Harley is part of that. Brian George, Cassandra Wolf, different folks, assess their needs. And oftentimes it's Betsy, Kimberly in the office that is the first point of contact for that. And then help where we can. And oftentimes we can. You know, sometimes we'll go into partnership with other churches around, use a thing called Access that helps coordinate the effort, so person's not going, you know, here and then going to Fifth Reformed and then going over to other places, but it's working all together. And it's a great joy to be able to help them. Sometimes, you know, rarely, I guess, you know, if you see this as only we're going to help you if you end up coming here, that's going to be a pretty unfulfilling sort of thing. You know, sometimes it's a drop in the bucket and you don't know where that journey goes. Other times we have an opportunity to have more of an ongoing relationship with them. Brent. Yeah. Well, some of it is just function of size and availability. I mean, I think certainly with some of the operations, we have so many things going on at the church now that you know, the deacons have more responsibility because the congregation has grown, and yet there's more things going on that need to be attended to. So there's just a gap there with some of the operations. You know, the visitation thing as well, that's somewhere in between, you know, a diaconal and an elder role. Again, it's mostly just a function of size and helping to coordinate those things. I would say, though, with both of these things, and Greg and Jerry and Nina have filled those positions, you know, we can't just count on them to therefore do everything. You know, they have to be able to call on and help to facilitate that. And I know that's one of the things that Jerry and Nina are doing, especially they, you know, just coordinating, just getting everybody together and having this and helping to connect and facilitate some of that ministry. It's a good question. Good. You know, if you look on your sheet here, oh, sorry, we never talked about enabling. So outside is mostly mercy ministry, other people that come into contact with. So you don't have to be a member, basically, is what we're saying. You don't have to be a regular attender to receive diaconal care, to be deserving of that. You know, that's one of the things, even if you look back at Acts 6, there was this, you know, again, the church was growing, but you had, you know, what was seen as the continuing church, the Hebrew church, right? And then you had the Hellenistic church, which was, you know, more of the fringy church. And they said, no, everybody is worthy of this. And so they started the diaconate to actually help out with the fringy church. And that's just really true. I mean, a lot of times, I can tell you from experience, even recently, it's folks that are on the fringes that are hurting the most. And I know as elders and sometimes on deacons, we end up spending a lot of time with folks that maybe aren't members or maybe aren't sort of the, you know, the real pillars of the church, that kind of thing. Partially, it's not, I mean, just because there's need there. And so, you know, as people, that's just a good encouragement for us. As people, don't only think about the people that you know and are really the solid people. You know, I can really, you know, be on the lookout for those that are on the fringe. There may be a reason why they're on the fringe. Or even people that have change churches a lot, you know. Sometimes there's stuff going on in their lives that is precipitating that, and just being sensitive to that. Enabling ministries, there are a couple of things. One is facilities. Like, you know, why do we have this place? Why are we thinking about a capital campaign, and why have we decided to go in that direction? Is it because this is a destination, and this is an end, and this is what we're building? No, it's always about doing ministry. It's always about opening up to the community, whether it's for a wedding or whether it's to host voting or to have a blood drive or all of these other things, so that we can serve our neighbors and our neighborhood and have a dumpster day. We're going to be renting a dumpster in June for the neighborhood near here that doesn't have a neighborhood association, and so it's a way to serve them. So it's not that the facility is for us, but it's for the purpose of blessing those around us. God has always made his people so that they would be a blessing to the nations. That goes all the way back to Genesis. You know, even when his people were in captivity, some of you are familiar with Jeremiah 29, you know, pray for the city that you would be a blessing to them. And so we think about our facilities as a way that we can minister, have our bone situation so that we're ready for worship, so that our nurseries are equipped, so that we can welcome people in. It's not simply for us, right? It's a tool that is used, you know, so that people can hear when they walk in and sounds. All of those things are part of what I would call the enabling ministry. And the same thing with finances. You know, so you have two enabling ministries. You have the facilities and the finances. Finances, again, are the tool that we steward in order to make sure that we have this and make sure that we can do these things and make sure that we have pastors and other folks that can contribute to and help us in those areas. So this is how I would divide the diaconal roles. And some people, as deacons, are more equipped on one side than the other. Some folks are really good here. We have a facilities DMT. Some folks really love to serve in that way and love to build up. That's wonderful. Other folks are equipped here. Some people, you know, most people feel like they're not equipped for that, for the mercy outside. I could never do that. Probably are better at it than you think you are. You know, serving, mercy, justice, and agency. Serving, we get that. One of the things, and you know, that we come to is this idea of justice. We've talked about that over the years as we've looked at Amos, as we looked at Jesus' concept of that, and talking about the kingdom. So justice is not only sort of the retributive sense of justice, but it's the advocating. It's not only the mercy that meets the needs that comes, but it also recognizes needs that exist and advocates and stands for that. Can develop this a little bit more, and as we go on with some of our LTG training with regards to diaconate, we can talk about. That's where she's from. I don't have the text right in front of me. But the idea there is that she is a representative. So it doesn't mean servant in the way that it does in Acts chapter 6. The term there is used differently. They're representative. I doubt it very much that it means office there for her in the way that we would understand office anyway. And I think this is where, you know, we see, and I'll just end here because we got to wrap up. You know, the deacons, and getting back to Ruth Anna's comment, you know, the deacons very much carry out the work of the church. You know, they facilitate the work of the church. Carry out is actually a bad word because I don't want it to be that the deacons do this and nobody else does this. But the deacons are the ones that sort of grease the skids. They're the ones that say, all right, church, this is what it means for us to be the church in the community. Let's go. You know, let's stir up these gifts. And in that sense, they're the representative. You know, the way that word is used in extra-biblical literature is often used as the ship's captain, diakonos, or diakonos, the ship. He carries out the will of the line, of the, you know, that the owner of the ship, of the passengers, that they would go and they would get in the right place. And that's what the deacons help us do in terms of our church. They're helping us be the church, get in the right place. There you go. Just took a drink from a fire hydrant. I know some of you need to go get kids. I'll be here for a few minutes. Any questions? I am, just in terms of going forward from here, I know some of you are here just generally in terms of interest in leadership training. Others of you are here more specifically in terms of LTG. I'll be sending out some information this week. And I've got a couple of dates set aside where I want to get all elder and deacon candidates together, just talk about the Westminster Standards as a whole a couple of times. Then we'll divide up a little bit, and there'll be some training that is specific to the deacons that Robin and others, Bryant McGee also will help with that. Moving forward with that, then there'll be some training that is specific to elders. But that will be coming. So thank you.